Most kids are home today, Columbus Day, but every parent knows there are days when kids don't want to go to school or stay in the classroom once there. But what if that's not just occasional, but every day? Doctors and educators say what we used to call truancy in many cases is something else. It's school refusal. The reasons for it could range from a trauma like a parent's death or several little traumas like shaming because of reading difficulties. But the answer is not a truant officer or tougher demands on the child. Matt Doyle is a clinical social worker and therapist who founded Castle Hill Counseling and Consulting in Salem, Massachusetts. He's become a go-to expert in school refusal. Matt, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me in.
I can hear the response, oh, come on, more coddling. Tell us more about what this is.
I also hear similar responses from parents. I hear similar responses from guidance counselors, teachers. We just need to get the child into school, period. Mm-hmm. What that does is it isolates the actual issue at hand, which is a deep-seated, typically mental health issue driven by anxiety, for many children driven by depression. Other children, it really creates almost a trauma-like response.
Mm-hmm.
I like to refer to it as educational trauma for many, many children.
Educational trauma.
Yeah, it's this idea of anticipatory anxiety. Before you are even in the building, the mind is racing.
How about before you can even look at your homework the night before? You can't look at it.
That's right.
Because there's what? What is it? Such a sense of, if I can't do it, then I failed. What's happening?
It's the domino effect. So the perceived inability to complete a homework assignment creates this sense of panic and dread. What's coming the next day? Am I even going to sleep tonight? What are my parents going to say? What are my friends going to say because I've come for the fifth day in a row with no homework?
Hmm.
It becomes such an at times insurmountable feeling of anxiety that we have many children who literally will cocoon under the covers in their bedrooms, I am not going to school.
When you say many children, yeah, one study by the American Academy of Family Physicians concluded 1 to 5%
yes,
of school-aged children are affected by this.
Yes.
So describe it some more, because it can feel like laziness,
yes,
and being contrary and rebelling.
Right. Right.
How do you know it's not that?
That is a great question. So much of the work that I do within the practice and then my colleagues do within the practice is home-based intervention. So what that means is we are showing up at 8 o'clock in the morning and we are watching the process unfold around the attempts to get this child to school. Many events happen between the time that child opens their eyes and the time they are either getting in their parents' car or getting onto the school bus. A series of obstacles have already been laid out for that child.
You can't be late because in most high schools in particular,
yeah,
you have too many lates and then your grades are affected.
Correct.
And plus the parents have to go to work.
Yes. So being in the home in the morning, I see this unfold. I come into the bedroom. Child is in the bedroom, typically still in bed at 8 in the morning. And there is a look of complete panic on that child's face.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they are not necessarily pleased to see me at 8 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
However, we sort of work through that process, get comfortable, sort of typically pull up a chair next to this child's bed, and we talk about what's going on. Help me understand a little bit about what is happening this morning. And the things I hear about are very diverse. I hear about social bullying, what happened on Twitter last night, Facebook harassment, and the child just does not want to face peers following a horrific night of harassment.
Hmm.
This part of the issue is growing exponentially.
But I'm guessing also, mm-hmm, there's the kids that may have either undiagnosed or diagnosed learning challenges.
Yes.
And I'm hearing, too, that it's not necessarily won't get out of bed.
No.
Maybe gets out of bed, has a huge breakfast, and then,
yeah,
suddenly the foot dragging.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what has happened is that anxiety has accumulated.
Okay. So this is a real thing.
It is a real thing. Yes.
And you say that forcing kids only escalates it to an Armageddon.
Yes.
And doesn't work.
Correct.
But what does?
So what I typically recommend to parents, how can we start the partnership with the school system?
Well, in that case, yeah, you got to be lucky if someone in your school believes you.
That's part of the battle, and that's, mm-hmm, where, you know, really recruiting people into this process is very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Reaching out to a local therapist, the school nurse, these kids are consistently coming into the office with stomach aches, headaches, as the anxiety builds.
Well, and then what is this team supposed to do? Because the thinking has always been push. you know, push the kids back into the classroom. Right. You've got test taking now. There's been a sort of a get tough attitude. Right. If I understand correctly, you're saying, no, we do have to coddle them. We have to cocoon them.
Yes.
But I can see educators saying, I don't know whether or not to trust that a kid's, I mean, kids will take advantage of everything.
Right, of course.
And how can they have the resources
right.
to take care of an individual
I mean, that's
kid?
The interesting part, because I do have a lot of questions as well from special education administrators, from people within leadership levels of school districts who will ask that same question. Resources, resources, resources. Mm-hmm. If you have 5% of your student population who potentially are challenged with this particular issue, the numbers become pretty large. My typical response is when resources are allocated in a way that is built on flexibility, creativity, and really strong parent-school partnerships, you can see the momentum start to build. For example, having a greeter at the school, making it feel like a welcoming environment for that child to come to versus two more times and the truancy officer will be coming to your home. When we are managing this and talking about this and thinking about this as a mental health issue versus a probation or legal system issue, the interventions around that tend to get more creative and more flexible.
Well, for instance, there is a school, the Clark School. They've got a web-based curriculum so that kids who absolutely have a phobia about school don't have to come in. It's a mix of gifted students, maybe dancers who can't attend a regular school, but also these special needs kids we're talking about that have school refusal. And in your role at that school, you would actually take them outside for walks.
Yes. I cannot uphold the expectation that a 14-year-old male will come visit me in an office after already having that struggle of getting in the car, sit down with me, and for 45 minutes uphold the social expectation to have a conversation with me and make direct eye contact. So yeah, we really believe in the ability to combine exercise with therapeutic conversations, utilizing walking trails, shooting baskets, drawing, whatever we can do to make that conversation feel safe. We're hoping to have a deeper level of therapeutic understanding of what is driving the root of this issue. If we do not get to the roots of the issue, we are just throwing solutions up against a wall and hoping something sticks.
A couple of things. First of all, my heart's breaking thinking of, you know, decades ago, kids who, you know, I watched get suspended, get thrown out.
Oh, absolutely.
I've thought about this and I've realized in most cases they were ashamed, they were embarrassed, they were, you know, humiliated, they were in the back of the class.
Yes.
Boy, this is an overhaul, I would think, of everything we think about school. It's another way of turning educators into mental health advocates.
Yes. And there is what I would call an overarching philosophy amongst many districts that the school day ends at 3 o'clock. Our responsibility, therefore, ends at 3 o'clock. So what that creates as a side effect is the potential for hostile interactions between parents and school systems. It creates a misunderstanding of a child. It creates the perception that this child is manipulative versus the approach that we are wanting to encourage. We need a welcoming environment to support the process of this child getting up and willingly coming into that building. So we really want to base this set of interventions around a welcoming, compassionate approach while trying to understand what is actually driving this. There's so much growing research around children's retention of information being tied to physical activity. Even amongst MCAS, children are encouraged to chew gum. Hmm.
MCAS being the testing here in Massachusetts, but everybody has
standardized testing with the school districts, correct.
Chew gum during testing.
There's some growing evidence that children learn better when they are active and moving. And the children that have demonstrated really what I call an immobilization around being able to come to school, this pattern becomes ingrained and deepens very quickly, sometimes in a matter of 2 weeks.
Really?
We have a child that I would classify as school refusing or school avoidant. And the more proactive we are in addressing it quickly, of course, the better the outcomes are in being able to create a creative plan with the school system and really support the process of parents, teachers, guidance counselors forming a team around this child. All based on flexibility, creativity of the plan, modified daily schedules if needed, And then you sort of become maybe more formalized with the process. Maybe now we start to look at individualized educational plan that starts to really target specific priorities and benchmarks in a way that is also built on flexibility and identifying this child qualifies under the social and emotional disability laws.
By the way, what are you called when you go work with somebody? What are you called?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good question. Coach, mentor, family therapist, social worker, clinician.
Coach, though. What a great idea.
Yes.
Because it takes away some stigma that
it sure does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, coach. That's Matt Doyle, therapist, founder of Castle Hill Counseling and Consulting, specializing in school refusal. Kids whose anxiety, trauma, or emotional response makes it almost impossible for them to go to or sit in class. Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Robin.
So, school refusal. Maybe you don't buy it, but parents, teachers, is this familiar to you? Or a sudden explanation for behavior? What are you doing in your school for school refusal? Love to hear. Leave your thoughts and comments at hereandnow.org.